My brothers and sisters, I'd like to greet you once again with the little greeting of St. Francis. May the Lord give you his peace. Well, you know, did you ever hear the story about St. Peter on Easter Sunday? Huh? What a beautiful feast it is to celebrate Easter. And can you know, the gospel tells us when Jesus appeared to the apostles on Easter night that they were incredulous for sheer joy. Imagine, you don't expect someone to come back from the dead, huh? And even though our Lord had predicted it three times, his death and resurrection, they never caught it. They never got it. And so I remember I lived with a brother years ago. He used to have a little sign in the kitchen. He said, "For those of you who don't believe that the dead can come back to life, you ought to be here at quitting time." It happens every day, doesn't it? Anyway, St. Peter on Easter Sunday morning, you know, he had not yet seen the risen Lord, and one of the disciples ran up to him, and he said to him, Peter, I got some really good news and some really bad news for you. Well, Peter couldn't imagine what was going to be good news after the Lord's death and you know, crucifixion and everything. So he said to the disciple, "Well, what is it? What is it?" He said, "Well, Peter, the good news is that Jesus is risen." And when Peter heard that, he said, "Well, then what could possibly be bad news?" He said, "He's looking for you. He wants to talk to you about what you said Thursday night." So there's always a little bit of the good news and the bad news in our lives. And that brings us kind of to the theme of today's talk. We're talking about carrying our personal cross with Jesus. Last night, we talked about how carrying the cross with Jesus is a sign of discipleship. Today, in this first conference today, I'd like to talk about everyone has a cross. You know, that's one of the reasons why I chose this theme. I knew it's not the most popular theme, but it's important because everybody has a cross and we have to learn how to deal with it if we want to be Jesus' true disciples. Okay? Padre Pio used to say, "Everyone in life has a cross." He said, "Just make sure you carry your cross like the good thief and not like the bad one." Because both of those thieves had crosses, they were able to be very close to Jesus. Remember, the gospel tells us that, you know, he was crucified and on each side there was a thief with him, huh? And so because of those crosses, it brought them close to Jesus. And very often suffering brings a person in closer contact with God. But what did the bad thief do with his cross? Well, he thought only of himself, didn't he? And he only wanted to get off that cross. Remember, he turned to Jesus. The gospel tells us in the beginning, both of the thieves were mocking Jesus. Both of them were blaspheming him. And he said to Jesus, "Look, if you're the Messiah, get yourself down off your cross and get me down off my cross." Bishop Sheen said he wanted to go back to his work of thieving. So that's all he thought of. Get me down off my cross. He resented it. And in some sense was blaspheming the Lord. He didn't believe he was the Messiah. The good thief, on the other hand, St. Dismas, suffering on his cross changed him. Because as I said to you a moment ago, in the beginning, one of the gospels tells us both the thieves blasphemed Jesus. That meant even the good thief was doing that. You know? So we ask ourselves, well, how did he change? Well, I think the thing that probably started off any change within him was Jesus' first words off the cross. "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." You know, we know from Roman accounts of crucifixions that many times those who were crucified would curse their executioners and so on. Sometimes, this is a little bit harsh, gross, but sometimes the Romans go up on a cross and they would cut their tongues out. But there was no words of anger, hatred from the lips of Jesus, only a plea for forgiveness. And I think that must have stopped Dismas cold in his tracks. His sufferings made him begin to realize something, and that was that his execution was just, a just punishment for what he had done. He said to the other thief, he said, "Have you no fear of God? We are suffering for the wrong deeds we did. We got caught." Someone once said that's the great American commandment. today, thou shalt not get caught. Do anything you want, but don't get caught at it. As long as you can get away with it, you didn't do anything wrong. And so the good thief began to realize, we got caught. We're only paying the price for the wrong we did. See, he began to look at himself. That's the beginning of humility, isn't it? Humility is to recognize the truth about ourselves. And so he begins to realize this in the light of Christ's innocence there on that cross of his prayer for forgiveness. And you know, the only way we could ever ask God to forgive us our sins is to acknowledge that we are sinners. So Dismas, now Saint Dismas, you know, he began to realize, you know, the wrongs we had done. But he said, this man has done nothing wrong. So he could see the contrast between himself as a thief, whatever other things he did wrong, and Jesus as innocent. You know, there was a tradition that this good thief, when he was young, when the Holy Family was fleeing into Egypt, they were stopped by a group of thieves. Okay? And they were going to rob the Holy Family, harm them. And there was a young thief, and he said, something touched him and said, don't touch these people, leave them alone. And they did. And that God never forgot that good deed that he had done. You know, when the King George in England, remember he was the one who stepped down because he wanted to marry a commoner, remember that? And when he was dying, God inspired Padre Pio to pray for his salvation. And Padre Pio was going down to the chapel and he met a friar. He said, come with me, we're going to pray for someone. And they prayed and they prayed for King George. And then afterwards, as they were leaving the chapel, Padre Pio told them, we just prayed for King George, he's dying. And the friar said, well, no, I heard he was sick, but he got better. And Padre Pio said, no, he's dying. And the next day they found out that the king had died. Do you know the reason why God wanted Padre Pio to pray for the salvation of that king's soul? Was because when he became king of England, he refused to utter this denunciation of the Roman Catholic Church. He wouldn't do it. It was like harsh and disgraceful. He would not do it, and God never forgot that. So God doesn't forget good things we do. And so the good thief may have, when he was young, actually have saved the Holy Family from being robbed and harmed in any way. And so he makes, he comes to a sense of self-honesty, and that's what we need. We have to see ourselves as God sees us. Now, a lot of people don't like to see that. Remember Jesus said, you know, if a person is evil, they don't like to come near the light. Why? Because the light shows them what they're doing. And if they don't want to acknowledge it, they have a sense that, you know, I don't want to find out about myself like this. They keep running away from it. Why do you think so many people, particularly people who live these fast-lane lives and a lot of money and glitz and everything else, and why do they end up, you know, drinking, alcoholics, drug addicts and everything? They're trying to drown out their conscience. They don't want to see it. This good thief broke through. The first thief, the bad thief, would not acknowledge that. And so when this good thief acknowledged it, he came to faith. And you know, that was not an easy act of faith to make. You know, a lot of people say, well, he was a thief all his life and he stole heaven at the end. It wasn't all that easy. Because Jesus was hanging on a cross. Hands and nails in his hands and feet. Crown of thorns on his head. Crucified, scourged, you know, and he made an act of faith. And he said, remember me, you know, when you come into your kingdom. And Jesus gave him, remember, the greatest promise in the gospel. Today you will be with me in paradise. So humility, this good thief used his cross to get closer to God. And Sometimes we can get a lot of the cross, you know. Mother Teresa visited a woman in a hospital one time. This poor woman, she had one cross after another. And Mother Teresa said to the woman, you know, all those crosses you have, they're kisses from Jesus on his cross. And the woman said to Mother Teresa, Mother Teresa, would you please tell Jesus not to kiss me so much? Okay. Yes, we do have our difficulty in trying to accept the cross and make the best of it. But look at what that good thief did. He gained heaven. Today, you will be with me in paradise. You know, they say, there's a saying about suffering. It said it can make you either better or bitter. Depends on how you react. You know, how do we carry our cross? Suffering, you know, was never part of God's original plan for us. Suffering did not enter into the human experience until Adam and Eve sinned. It was only as a result of sin that suffering came. Remember, we talked a little bit about that last night, about the cross. The cross came, you know, because through pride and disobedience, we rebelled against God through our first parents. And somehow, St. Paul says, in Adam we all sinned. Now, don't ask me how that happened, but that's what he said. In Adam we all sinned. In other words, his choice was in some way reflected by us. And so suffering came, but it was not part of God's original plan. We would not have experienced sickness or death. We would not have experienced concupiscence, disorder in our emotions and passions. We would have had, you know, infused knowledge. Today we have confused knowledge. The pains of childbirth and Adam taking care of the garden, the sweat of his brow and raising, and what would grow would be thorns and weeds and so on. Now suffering, God uses suffering to help us grow in holiness. Okay? Why? It molds strong people. You know? Don't just seek ease and pleasure in life. That's not why we're here. I was in a girls' high school one time in Union City, New Jersey. And it was an academy there. My eighth grade teacher was teaching there at the time. And I'll never forget the sign I saw. It said, don't pray for an easy life, but pray to be a strong person. You see, if you want an easy life, then everything has to depend on going just your way. But who can control their life to make everything go just their way, huh? So, looking for an easy life is not easy. But, to be a strong person, well, then you're prepared to deal with anything in life. And you know, when you had some adversity, you grow to be strong. And so, suffering can make somebody bitter when they resent it, when they reject it. And, you know, sometimes we can be filled with resentment and carry a lot of anger and rage when we feel pain, particularly. I mean, nobody likes it. We have a comfortable zone. Every one of us has a little comfortable zone around us. And when things intrude into that comfortable zone and make us feel uncomfortable, we get upset. We begin to react. We can get angry, annoyed, and so on. When suffering comes, people get angry at God for sending it, for allowing it. And sometimes for things that we're responsible for. I remember I was teaching high school, in religion in high school in New Jersey when I was first ordained. And one of the textbooks they had a story about a young girl. She had premarital sex with her boyfriend. She got pregnant and she blamed God. Why'd you make me, you know, get pregnant? God didn't do it. It's just a consequence of what she did. But she was blaming God. And a lot of people act like that. They blame God for things that sometimes they did themselves, you know. So bitterness and resentment. Look in your own heart. Do you carry resentment, bitterness? Are we angry at people who have caused us pain, discomfort, you know? Sometimes we can get filled with a spirit of revenge. I want to get back at them. I wish them evil. We can become filled with self-pity. I always tell our brothers and sisters when I teach them class, I said, when I die on my tombstone, put down here lies Father Andrew Apostoli, you know, just put this saying, Father always said, cancel all your pity parties, okay? So if you've sent out invitations for pity parties, send out cancellation notices, okay? You'll be much happier. It's like the lady who, she was an old lady and she was in the parish. And this was a parish that she was there from the very beginning and they were celebrating 50 years of their anniversary. And the pastor, he wanted to, you know, have a big, big celebration, a big picnic and so on in the grounds of the parish. And he wanted every parishioner to come. And he didn't send out invitations. He wanted to call every single parishioner and invite them personally. Well, there was one lady, that lady who had been in the parish from the beginning, he somehow mistakenly did not call her. And she was so upset. You know, and he found out how upset she was. He called her up and said, Mrs. So-and-so, I'm so sorry, you know. Please forgive me. It was an oversight. You know, I thought we had everybody on the lists and everything else, and I apologize. And I want to, please, I invite you, please come to the parish picnic. She said, no, Father, I'm sorry. I'm so offended. I was in this parish from the beginning for 50 years. I should have been one of the first ones called, and you didn't call me. I refuse to accept your apology, you know, and I will not come to the picnic. And anyway, it's too late. I've already prayed for rain. So you know, people react in different ways to dealing with the troubles that they have. So cancel all your pity parties. If you remember anything from this retreat, remember that. Cancel all your pity parties. You know, they did a study on depression in 17 major technological countries in the world for depression. Do you know where we ranked? Number one. So much depression. I think a lot of depression is anger, frustration, resentments, you know, and you ever see these people on the road and they go by you, and you're going maybe 60 miles an hour, and they go by you like you're standing still. You ever see that? You know, Bishop Sheen said that speed, a lot of that, you know, has a self-destructive element to it. People are so angry. You know, people, you try to move in. Everybody's, you know, there's a place in the 3rd Avenue, 2nd Avenue bridge going from the Bronx into Manhattan. And I have to go there at least once a week, early in the morning with all the trucks and the cars and everything, the rush hour, you know. And it's not like, I don't know what your rush hour is like over here, but I got a postcard one time from Wyoming. And it showed some cattle going across the road and said on the bottom, rush hour in Wyoming. That's not the Bronx. That's not Manhattan. Okay? And you know, everybody's, you know, alternating, trying to get in. And some people resent you if you come in. Well, you know, I got to get in. You got to get over. You know, it's a give and take. And there's some people so angry, you know, there's a lot of frustration. There's a lot of bitterness. People hold it all in. And they're so quick to jump at other people. It's because they're carrying so much in their heart. Frustration, anger, resentment. Don't let that destroy your life. Don't let the past destroy your future, your present and your future. You gotta work it out. You gotta forgive. You gotta let go. If we don't eventually accept our crosses, we can carry the bitterness for the rest of our lives. I remember a story about a friar who he was a golden jubilarian, which meant he was a priest and a friar for over 50 years. And one time, a friar came to visit who was kind of seeing how things were going in the friary. He was sent by the provincial to make what we call a visitation there. And so he was talking to this old friar. He said, how are things going? So the superior, his terrible superior. You know, he's so mean and, you know, and this and that. And the friar who's listening says, I know the superior. He would never do that. He would never be that way. He said to him, Father, when did these things happen? 50 years ago. But But he was talking about him like it happened 50 minutes ago. Let it go. Empty your heart so you can find peace. See, that's why suffering can make us bitter if we don't deal with it right. If we don't let it go. Suffering can make us better if we willingly accept our crosses and our suffering. I was on Mother Angelica's, I was saying Mass for Mother Angelica one time at the, you know, down in EWTN. And Mother was investing a sister at that Mass. And she gave her a name. She said it herself. She said, I gave you this name that, she told that young sister, I gave you this name. I know you didn't want it, but I want you to have it because you'll get to like it. That's what she said to her. And she's a very honest woman, Mother Angelica. That's for sure. You know, she is a very, very prayerful. I mean, she's a holy nun. She had that stroke and everything. I remember the time, you know, the eye was drooping and, you know, but she's been in a coma for a long, long time. She can't speak because of the stroke. She comes out of it every now and then. So I shouldn't say a coma, but she's a lot of sleeping, you know. But before she went into that, you know what she told the sisters? Don't count me out, she said. I'll be back. So, they say she's appearing to people all over the world, like Padre Pio and bilocation. I mean, I don't know, but she is holy. There's no doubt in my mind. Mother Angelica was a very holy sister. So suffering can make you better, okay, if you willingly accept the cross. Did I tell you what she said? She said that to this young sister, she said, once you accept the cross, it's no longer a cross because you've accepted it. It's a cross because we resent it. We don't want it. And how do you do that? How do you come to accept your crosses? Well, first of all, try to see the hand of God in them. In the crosses. Don't just focus on the natural causes, you know, that guy cut me off, and you know, or somebody did something and said something, the human causes, and stop there, you know. Get beyond that. In this sense, try to see that nothing, remember this, nothing that happens to us, nothing, can ever happen to us that God either doesn't want or he doesn't permit. Otherwise, it can't happen. Okay? It has to be either God wants it, and sometimes we call that God's permissive will. His will of good pleasure. You know, when God's providence works in our life, sometimes there are disappointments. But, you know, he knows what he's doing. I remember I had an example of that happen to me when I was a young priest. I had an assignment. I was teaching high school. I taught in high school seminary for 6 years, but I taught in three other high schools locally in the Diocese of Paterson, New Jersey. One of the students we had she was the student that was the test case for the United States about taking someone off life support. And she was drinking, and she was on drugs, and she was drinking alcohol, and she went into this coma. And so they had her on life support, and that became the test case for the United States. And she was a sophomore in the high school where I taught. And they finally did pull the plug on her, and she lived for 13 more years. But she never came out of that coma that she was in, you know. And so it was a very, very, certainly very difficult thing for that family to go through, to experience. But you know, the working of God, to see the hand of God, whatever happens to us, okay? Now, I was telling you about an experience that I had. I was teaching in the high school seminary, and the last year that I was there, I taught in a high school in the Diocese of Paterson called Pope John 23rd High School. Here's an interesting fact about that high school. For their first 5 years of existence, they never won a football game. They was in their fifth season that they won their first football game. Somebody from that town was in Texas, and they heard it announced on the radio in Texas. It was big news down there, big football state, you know, in Texas. Okay. Later on, they got this guy, his name was Vic Paternostro. He had coached under Ara Parseghian at Notre Dame. He became the high school coach. He's the most winning high school coach, football coach in New Jersey history. Okay, so they went from not winning a game for five seasons to becoming champs in New Jersey a number of times under this Vic Paternostro. So he went from one extreme to the other. But anyway, I was transferred from there. I had really my last year. It was a very beautiful year. I enjoyed it. I was teaching over at that high school too, besides at the seminary. And all of a sudden, I get a transfer to go to the novitiate. Okay, now the particular house in the novitiate, there was a lot of problems there. I used to be on what they call the formation council. So all the friars working in formation would gather maybe two or three times a year, and we discuss how things are going in each of the houses with the programs that we had for the young brothers. Okay. Well, whenever we came to that house in Beacon, it was always, well, we got this problem, we got that problem. It's sent to me every time we got together. It's a problem house, you know. And here I am being sent there. And I'm leaving the house that I really was so happy in, okay? But, you know, I always tell people, see these three knots here? You know what they stand for? My vows. You know what the vows are of a religious? Poverty. We don't own anything of our own. Chastity. We don't get married. And obedience. You got to do what your superior tells you to do. Our young brothers call it no money, no honey, and a boss. Okay. That's the three vows. Okay. So, you know, I kept saying to myself, well, Father Andrew, you made that vow of obedience. You go. You have to do the will of God. Got to obey. Well, you know, within 2 years, the entire situation reversed. Where I went, a new superior came in. He cleaned up all the problems. Yeah. Where I left, within 2 years, it was it's a lot of problems. Unfortunately, some scandal got in there, and it just ruined the beauty of that house, you know? So God knew what he was doing. I didn't see it at the time I got my transfer, but I tried to obey as best I could to accept it, you know? So see the hand of God working in your life. That's important. It's not just, well, this one did this, or that one said that, or how come this situation came. Look beyond it, because nothing can happen to you that God either doesn't want or he doesn't permit it. The permissive will of God usually involves an evil on the part of someone. Why does God permit these ISIS people to slaughter all these Christians and other people so mercilessly? Well, only God in his infinite wisdom and his plan can answer that. But we have to trust that God has a reason. Nothing can happen without his allowing it. See, that's where we have to trust in God. See God working. See him working in your life. You know, his hand. Everything will eventually move toward what is good. Okay? Remember Job, when he suffered his tragedies. He saw them as the hand of God, he said, the Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. So that's how he was able to deal with his trials. And we call him, you know, the patience of Job. Remember, Job's wife got upset with him. Remember, she said, why don't you curse God and die? And you remember what he said? He said, if we accept good things from the hand of the Lord, why should we not accept that which is evil? It comes from the same Lord, the same hand. St. Francis de Sales said, it didn't matter to Job whether what came was good or bad. What mattered was that it came from the Lord. So you can deal, and you and I can deal with some of the difficulties of our life a lot better if we see the Lord's permissive will in these things, that he permits them. See? Because nothing can happen to you that God either doesn't want or he doesn't permit. All right? It's important, the important thing to do is to see God's hand there, okay? Willing it, permitting it, in all that we suffer, in all our crosses, okay? Because if we only stop at the human cause of our problems, we're going to hate people and resent them, all right? And that's why it's very important to realize nothing can happen to you that God doesn't want, doesn't permit. One time in the life of St. Francis, the devil appeared to him, threatened him. He said, I'm going to beat you up. And St. Francis laughed at him. He said, you can't do anything to me. Not that God doesn't want. And if God permits you to beat me up, I'll take it coming from God, not from you, because you can't do anything unless he permits it. You see? That must have really humiliated Satan, don't you think? Father of pride. Oftentimes we must struggle to accept our crosses, okay? There's no doubt about that, huh? When suffering first comes, the pain, the shock can make us angry. But with God's grace, we gradually learn to accept our cross. Acceptance, you know, we take it again. We see the hand of God. You know, and this is very important, you know, in your life. See, a lot of times people, we carry things in the past, and if we haven't worked them out, we haven't worked through them, they remain alive. You know, Father John Powell, great Jesuit, he used to say, if you bury anything, bury it dead. Don't bury it alive, because if you bury it alive, it's going to come back at you. And in other words, a lot of things of the past. I'm always angry about this and, you know, things and way back to one's childhood and so on. We all do that. We all have stuff inside, deep inside, which sometimes gradually comes to the surface. I do a lot of spiritual direction, and that happens so often in the lives of people, and they don't even know where some of their upsetment now, resentments and, you know, anger is coming from. And many times you start to talk about it, and these things begin to surface. But I was really hurt when that happened, you know, and I got very, very bitter. And now I'm bitter at everything and everybody, you know. Once they can get in touch with that, it kind of surfaces. I always use the example of a beach ball, you know. Take a beach ball, make believe that's where all my problems are. It's in that beach ball. It's, of course, a beach ball filled with helium. You push it underwater in a little swimming pool, for example. And then the ice forms, okay. And the ice gets that thick. That's never going to come out of there. But it may be affecting people unconsciously. They don't even know where their resentment is coming from, okay? Why they're always angry. You ever meet people who are always angry? You know, just so quick to, you know, come out with sharp words and, you know, cynicism. That's a sign of somebody carrying around a lot of anger, a lot of resentment. Maybe they're completely out of touch with it. It's so far down under that ice. See? But what happens? As people begin to become a lot more peaceful, even to grow, knowing who they are, trusting God. God is like that sun melts that ice until it gets to about that thick. And what happens to that helium balloon? It comes flying out of there. Why? Huh? There's an old saying, there's nothing as powerful as an idea whose time has come. In other words, in a healing process, as you get closer to God, and you become more forgiving, more loving, more accepting of God's will, you become more gentle. And the more gentle you are, you don't have the anger. Repression takes a lot of anger to push things down. And as you become more peaceful, just the opposite happens. These things come up, see? And sometimes that's when a person begins to let go and begin to live a different life. Instead of being angry, you know, always walking around with a little chip on their shoulder for somebody to get, you know, just try to do something to them, you know, they begin to let it go and find a great deal of peace. See, the saints tell us the closer you get to God, peace and joy will fill your soul more. And that's important. But that does require that we forgive, that we let go, and so on. Remember, someone who I think how to learn this acceptance is right in the gospel was the man Simon of Cyrene. Remember him on the stations across the fifth station as you make the station? Huh? Simon of Cyrene helps Jesus carry the cross. Now here he was a farmer. He probably was out early that day farming. It's about noontime. Jesus, remember, was being led out to crucifixion around noontime, or maybe 9 o'clock, between 9 and 12. And he's coming back because that evening, 4 o'clock or so in sundown, begins the great Jewish feast of Passover. So he doesn't want to be in his old clothes, work clothes, and he wants to get home, clean up, get ready. And he's just standing there. He's trying to get through Jerusalem, and this crowd is being led along, and they're leading along three prisoners carrying crosses. And all of a sudden, some Roman soldier grabs him. Because, you know, Jesus was falling. They didn't want him to die before he got to that cross up there on Calvary. So they grabbed Simon of Cyrene. He has no idea what's going on. And all of a sudden, he's carrying his cross. Not only is it bitter to carry that cross, but everybody's mocking him now. Cursing at him like they were cursing at Jesus. And he said, I don't deserve this. Why me? I didn't do anything. Why me? Why me? That's a big thing, right? When suffering comes, why me? And all of it, you know, and as he walked, though, that way with Jesus, he completely changed inside. He began to find the joy of carrying the cross with Jesus. In fact, he had two sons, Rufus and Alexander. And the only other mention of them in the Gospel is St. Paul. When one of the churches that he wrote to, he said, give my best to Rufus and Alexander. They became very prominent in the Christian community. I think they were at Rome. And it was because their father carried the cross with Jesus. So he was changed inside. And that's what happens. You know, it can make us better accepting those crosses. To, you know, what is my attitude then to my crosses in life? Do my sufferings make me bitter? Do I frequently go back over my sufferings in my mind? You know, the old saying, don't play the old tapes. You know, I go back over, oh, this guy did this, and that guy said that, and, you know, this happened to me, oh, me, you know, pity, great pity party. This is great pity party stuff, isn't it? We don't want that. Cancel all your pity parties, right? Okay, to let it go. Don't play the old tapes. Erase them. And, you know, people, you know, victim soul. I remember one guy, somebody was going through a little bit of self-pity, and this guy said, all right, get the nails. Come on, get the nails. In other words, okay, I'm being crucified here. So we don't want to get into all that self-pity. Am I angry at God for the sufferings he allowed? Do I curse him, refuse to love him? If there's that obstacle, get rid of that. Turn to God and ask him to help you. You know, ask him to take away the bitterness so that you will begin to love. You know, don't make the rest of your life miserable because of what happened 25 years ago, 30 years ago. Okay? Am I still angry at people who caused me suffering? Have I refused to forgive? Do I hold grudges? Is my attitude making my life miserable, depressed? It is time for me to accept my crosses then that God permitted. And you know, if you look honestly enough, you can sometimes find that a good happened. Or you were prevented from an evil. I'm going to talk about that in another conference. Just like that transfer that I got. You know, I didn't want it. I thought it was going to be miserable. But the new superior came in. He cleared out all the problems. You know, he's a good leader. And that's what they needed, you know. And unfortunately, where I left, which was very happy, I know I would have been miserable there, you know. So God knows what he's doing. Do my sufferings make me better? We looked at being bitter. What about better? Have I accepted my crosses that God sent? Have I made peace in my life, you know, by resignation and acceptance of what God permitted? There's the wisdom in that little serenity prayer. You know, Jonathan Morris, Father Jonathan Morris, he's the priest on, Fox. He used to be on Fox News. He was their consultant priest. I had him on my show on EWTN, you know, on Sunday Night Prime. And he wrote a book based on the serenity prayer. This is a very good book. Yeah. And you know that little serenity prayer? Such wisdom. Lord, grant me the serenity, the patience, to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. There is a way, that's a way to serenity, isn't it? Do I have peace in my soul because I have accepted what God has sent? or at least permitted in my life? Do I find peace now? Because I can honestly say I've accepted it. See, remember that saint who said, wasn't just Mother Angelica was quoting a saint when she said, once you accept the cross, it's no longer a cross. You have accepted it. The bitterness will leave you, see, because you've accepted it. You know, the Lord, we believe that in the first, second station after Jesus was condemned by Pilate, he was given the cross. And I heard one meditation on that. When he received it, he kissed it because it came from his heavenly Father. Jesus fell 3 times carrying his cross, but he always got up, didn't he? To begin again. Do we get up if we fall or stumble under our cross? You know, if it offends us so much, don't stay down. Get up, keep going. Do we try to begin again if we have neglected to carry that cross? And finally, have we experienced some peace because we have accepted what God has permitted or sent into our life? We can grow from that, you know. The saints tell us the greatest thing you could do is to do the will of God. You know, I'm reading right now St. Faustina in her diary. I've been reading it for almost three years now. I'm not done with it. So I absorb it. I go over it and over it and over it. And it really can form a beautiful interior life if you go through it and see what she went through, you know. Because I think the Lord, he told her, I want you to write down carefully everything I say to you. Because he said, I want a vast throng in heaven to praise my mercy forever. And so I've learned a lot. And she talks about that resignation to God, doing his will as the most important thing we could do. So the cross can teach us a lot, you know. So don't let your crosses make you bitter. Let them make you better. Okay. May Jesus and his Holy Mother bless you. Okay.